Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 476. And we have a rare returning guest in the legend that is Jordan Gray. And Jordan has been busy since they were last on, let me tell you that. And we discuss all of that. We discuss how long it's been. This is such an amazing chat. We recorded it the day after Jordan got back from the Edinburgh Fringe. Jordan was one of the stories of the Edinburgh Fringe with, I mean, you'll hear all about it. 5-star reviews everywhere. We'll go into it. Let's not even go into it now. But what I will go into is we talk a whole load in this about Jordan's Soho Theatre run of shows, which is a huge deal. Now, as this podcast goes out, they started a few days ago. They've all sold out. But what I can tell you when you're excited about this is a date has been added on October 28th at the London Palladium. Tickets are on sale now and you want to swoop. As I said, this whole run at the Soho Theatre has sold out before the run has started, which is madness. And now Jordan is taking the show to the London Palladium. You're going to want to get all over that now, really, but feel free to wait till the end of the podcast and then you'll really be chomping at the bit or champing at the bit. Who knows? As ever, we're brought to you by speechdevelopmentrecords.com. I've got loads of merch over there if you want any of that. It's really lovely. There's even some brand new merch that has my big stupid face on. You can also head over to patreon.com/scroobiouspip, where for like $1 a month or $2 a month, you can support the podcast if it's within your means to do so. And yeah, you can head to twitch.tv/scroobiouspip, yo, and see me getting up to all sorts of nonsense. I'm having the most fun over there. At the moment, I'm streaming more often than I'm not, it feels like days-wise, not hours-wise. That'd be insane. But yeah, I'm over there a lot, and it's lovely to chat with you lot live. So yeah, there's all that. If this is your first time tuning in, check out previous episodes. Let me think of people to get mentioned in this episode that have been on previously. Russell Brand has been on previously. I talk about the Michael Cashman episode really briefly. It's one of the best episodes I've ever done. It's a two-parter. It's astounding. I highly recommend you go and listen to that, particularly if you don't know anything about Michael Cashman. Simon Pegg has been on twice. Nick Frost has been on twice. Florence Pugh has been on twice. Frankie Boyle has been on twice. If we're going over the people who've been on twice, there's a handful. Sarah Pascoe has been on twice. There's been a few people on twice and they're great. And there's been a load of people on once who are also great. Let's get into the episode. Jordan is an absolute force and everything we talked about here. I'm glad we recorded it when we did because we wanted to keep that energy and excitement of the astounding month that had just happened. So, but it's one of many astounding months ahead. So let's get into the podcast. This is episode 476 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Jordan Gray. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. And we're going. Right, I'm joined today by Jordan Gray. How are you?
I'm all right, man. Thanks for having me again. It's nice.
I'm really excited to chat to you. And we've gone back and forth on this because I saw you a week ago and we were thinking of recording then. And I was like, no. There's going to be exciting things that happen in the next week. And there was. So I'm glad we held off.
It's been exponential. And I'm not much of a mathematician, but if I draw it on a graph, it's gone. It's just going up now.
Yeah. I was proper just kind of politely going, no, let's wait until you're back. And you're like, we want to catch the energy. So basically you're just back from the Fringe. Like you got back yesterday, right?
Edinburgh Fringe. Yeah. It's my first sleep, genuinely my first sleep in 12, in a month. I've forgot what a month is. Yeah. It's my first sleep in 27 days. That was a proper sleep. I was sleeping on a couch that was half my size. But I'll keep waking up with like, this is a silly comparison to make, but like proper PTSD of like, shit, when's the show? Because I've only been sleeping for hours at a time, 1 or 2 hours at a time before I've got to go do something.
Yeah.
So I keep waking up like, oh God, I'm so quick, call them and tell them I'm going to be there soon. I'm not going to do anything for 2 days.
You can actually relax for a bit. But yeah, we wanted to record immediately because we didn't want to lose the buzz and excitement, because it's been a mad, mad fringe for you.
Just to start, thank you so much for coming, but also for you standing in the tech booth in my show. That was so sweet.
Mate, honestly, I might not have gone to the fringe if it wasn't for your show. I'm in an erring because it's been a bit of a hectic month. There's been some ups and downs. And I started to see all the reviews coming in for your show. And I was like, I can't not see this. I was talking to your a tech guy about it when I did the Fringe. I got like 13 or 14 shows in, and it suddenly occurred to me, I was like, oh, it's never going to be as good as this, is it? Like, because you're just doing it in one venue over and over again. You're just getting to, as a nerd for the craft of it, you're getting to hone every moment. And I could say that in your performance as well, the awareness that if you leave a pause here, someone will laugh in a certain way, and then you bounce off that, and you become the circus master for it. So I was like, I need to go and see this in that room where when you've done it at that point 20 times in a row or whatever. So yeah.
The confidence of knowing something works, and then if you don't get the laugh immediately, the confidence of, well, it's going to come in 4 or 5 seconds, so just leave it. And it works every time. Yeah. It's so weird. It is. It's a formula, and then it's done. You have to stay present. If you lose the presence of it, I think people are quite savvy nowadays. They're like, oh, this, we might as well just be watching TV. You need to be present in the room all the time, which is why I consciously found myself, I was chatting with somebody about this, I balance on one foot quite a lot when I'm performing for no reason. It's nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But it's me giving myself something to stay present in the moment, because you have to balance. You have to think about balancing. And if I'm doing that, I'm like, well, I'm in the room. If I was standing on 2 feet, I could just be reciting it.
Yeah.
It was a really weird thing to find out about yourself.
I love that. Yeah, that's really interesting. And again, it was like, I don't think you get that same amount of personal analysis and honing and crafting when you're touring, because the rooms are different each time, and the lights are different, and the sound is different. And they're those small things that will just, it's enough of a change.
So true, definitely.
Whereas I think being in one room, it's the unique thing about Edinburgh. There's a lot to hate about Edinburgh. And we'll talk about a lot of that as well, because I want to kind of look at the whole journey to this year's one. But one of the things I think that gets overlooked is that you're in the same room. You've normally got the same sound team, everything. So you can really just drill in.
Hone in on the variables.
Yeah.
That is so interesting. Yeah, for sure. And then you're never really supposed to blame the audience. And I don't think I've really ever legitimately blamed an audience. But sometimes you go, oh, that lot tonight. Because nothing else changed apart from who was in the room. That lot tonight were a little bit sticky or a little bit dry.
Yeah.
Also, because the reviews came in really soon. It was day two. We got a lovely Guardian, lovely 5-star in the Guardian. It was really, really sweet. But then the knock-on effect we saw the day, maybe like the day 7 or day 8, when those readers were suddenly appearing, and it's a room full of strangers that don't know anything about me.
Yeah.
And I've suddenly got a different audience. And then I'm talking to people that have had success, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's what happens. So now you're going to, all they've got is a recommendation from a newspaper that they like.
Yeah.
They don't know how rude it is or how naughty it is or whatever.
I don't know anything
about
it. Not
my people. And you find your people over the fringe. It was great playing to that sort of audience. I'm having to really work and be a bit more broad without losing what I think makes it special. Yeah, it's just that it is. For a craftsperson, it's a joy.
I did exactly that. I was only out. I wasn't even in Edinburgh for a full day. I had an evening when I saw your show. I had half a day the next day and half a day the day after that, because I had to go to Glasgow and to Liverpool. But on that half day before I went to Liverpool, I always catch Rob Alton because he's just my favourite performer. I think he's amazing.
Yeah, incredible.
But I was like, right, he's on at 2:50. Let me have a look at who's on before that. And as soon as I started to Google who's on Edinburgh, it came up that the people who'd been nominated for the award had just come out that day.
Oh, right.
So I was like, okay, I'll have a look and see if anyone who's been nominated is up. And I saw someone I'd not heard before, a Lauren Patterson.
Yep.
Went and caught their show completely blind, like not knowing anything at all. And it was one of the best things I've seen in years. Absolutely astounding show.
So I'm
hopefully getting her on the podcast. And that was exactly that, as you were saying, of just going, oh, well, this has got a good review. I'll go.
Yeah, because your time is precious. So it's like you go and find something that's, you know, been lauded or whatever. Lauren Patterson was the first person, comedian I ever bought a ticket to see. I saw plenty of comedians before, but I went and saw her at Soho Theatre. She's been so nice to me, this Fringe. Really, really sweet. A properly good comedian.
Amazing comedian. Yeah. And said just someone I, for some reason, hadn't been that aware of. And then just, I mean, like, I DM'd her about this. I kept welling up. And on bits that weren't particularly, like, no one else in the room was welling up, but there were certain moments that I connected to so deeply that I was just like, everyone's just kind of laughing along. And I'm like, I had my mask on. And I'm like, I'm glad I've got my mask on because my lips go in, all of this. I'm like, well, no one knows at least.
But do you think that's also a bit of you being a person that is so into the craft of it when you see something executed so well, but and you can see the willpower that's gone behind that to get it right completely. From them as well.
And again, we'll talk about it on Lauren's episode. I'm not going to spend your whole episode talking about Lauren, but her show is about being working class in this industry and always being one global pandemic away from having to go and get a normal job. And I've just lived that my whole life of doing the arts, all the different things I've done. It's always been like, I've always felt I'm going to be back in HMV at some point. It's why I got genuinely emotional when it looked like HMV was going to close. Because I was
that's
like, that's my backup plan. And that's the only thing I know how to do. And now that's gone. But yeah, there's some moments in that that just proper got me. And yeah, I love that about The Fringe. But so one of the reasons, as I say, and I really had to come and catch this show in this moment was I caught what I think was at least one of your first kind of headline shows in London. I came along and saw you
in
a little room there.
A press night for the first. I took a 45 to Edinburgh in 2018 and you very kindly came to the press show at the Curtain in Shoreditch.
Yeah. And I loved it. I really enjoyed it. But I also felt, right, it's a press night. There's stuff you're working out. You were still, I mean, we should rewind even further because you were on the podcast last time you were properly on the podcast for a full episode, you were a singer who'd done The Voice and happened to be trans. A lot's changed since then.
Still transgender.
That stayed. That's good. But yeah, you after that, you've moved into comedy and you realise that that was your passion and your love. And we've talked about this privately on your radio show. In fact, we touched upon it a bit. And yeah, so you were still new at that point.
For sure.
You would reference a lot that because of where you're from and how you speak and how you deliver stuff, you feel like you're doing a Russell Brand impression or you're being compared to
Can't get away with it. We've got the same haircut most of the time and we're basically from the same town. I think he's from Grays. I grew up in Tilbury.
Yeah.
That's always going to happen. And it's really nice seeing that peppered into the reviews now, but it's not like the first thing people say. They used to be like, basically, if you're going to go see this, understand it's Russell Brand with tits, first of all, which is quite a bold thing to start with. Just also on that, in that same vein of like, so what were you saying about Lauren? We're not going to talk loads about Lauren's show. Let Lauren talk about her show. But that thing of this year being that working class sort of vibe, I felt a bit like of a traitor because like there's so much conversation around working class comedians being priced out of The Fringe this year. And I am one of those people. I just happened to sell a TV show before I left. Otherwise, I'd have no money at all. And then like feeling it went so well that I'm not got the right to be a part of those conversations now with people that I'd be slogging it in the trenches with before. Literally there's some actual trenches down by Cowgate that I was literally hanging out in. And I don't get to have that now. But I'm like, I'm going to be working class till I die. Whatever happens, I'm going to be nouveau riche and then I'm going to be poor again and then I'll be nouveau riche. But I'm never going to be anything other than working class. And it's been a really, it sort of distanced me from it a bit. That's been a bit sad.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit then, because it's part of the journey to this year's Fringe, because I heard you talking about it on the Mum and Mama podcast. And it is a thing where the prices of venues, the support from The Fringe in general seems to have dropped off massively. I've seen a lot of comedians really unhappy with the chance they have of putting on a show, let alone making a profit. A profit's basically out the window for most shows at The Fringe this year, which means you're having to commit to making a loss, which means, as you touched upon on Mum and Mama, you're going to have a vast majority of middle class or rich comedians up there, because
it changes the
it's
whole
not
tone
a risk
of the place.
That you can have an option in these, particularly in times like this. It's not an option. And as you touched upon, you'd happen to have sold a show, a TV show, and we'll talk more about scripts and all this kind of thing at some point as well. But yeah, it was because of that that you got to go up there. And again, to be clear, we're going to be talking about 5-star reviews, sold out shows, nominations, awards, all sorts of stuff. But you were in a 73-seat a venue. Like, this wasn't a big... Yeah. This isn't one of the, oh, you're in one of the big Pleasance rooms, or, you know, I think often I seem to think most nominees are in your 150 to 250 kind of size rooms, and they're kind of... that kind of world. So you were going up there to just, as you touched upon in your show, when you went up there, obviously you overplayed it a bit, but when you went up there, no one knew who you were. It's not that no one knew who you were, but you certainly weren't one of the big fringe names when you went up
there.
And you've come back as the talk of the fringe. So
sweet. It's just gone so incredibly. I like the poetry of it being like a little shipping container as well. That's when you talk about they'll make a space out of anything. Yeah, I went up there committed to taking a £2,000 loss. That was within my budget. It was like, it's an investment. And it's just mythical to think you can come away with anything, and not to talk numbers, but we're very, very happy with how it's gone. It's like, but it doesn't change any of that part of the conversation. I won the lottery a bunch in my life. I've won, not literally, I got to do The Voice. That's a crapshoot anyway.
Yeah.
And then a bit of prize money, a bit of money for being on the show. It's not a sustainable model to keep winning stuff. How many competitions can you win? Also, there's loads of competition. That's not a career. So
that's
I keep winning stuff.
That's the nature of competitions, isn't it? There's a lot of competition.
That's probably why it's all that, So I just keep investing that money and trying to make the best out of it. And this was another situation. To get a TV show across the line is insane. To get paid enough for it to be able to cover a cost. So let's not pretend I didn't have, like, I spent some money on PR, spent some money on production. It is just me and a cardboard phone box and a keyboard. No, there's no production goes into the show itself, but I have a producing team. And then I signed with Independent 2 months before I left, and that's been invaluable. They're incredible.
They're fantastic.
Great,
that's who I'm with. I've been with Independent from the start. And the thing I love about Independent is they see stuff that they're excited about. And like my agent is always kind of going, because again, it's been up and down on the acting front and all that. But he's like, no, it's going to happen. Like the things... Obviously, good stuff has already happened, but the things you want is like, they're going to happen. It's just you don't know how long they're going to be. It's like, that's the reason I took you on, because it's like, oh, this is going to happen in the end. And a lot of agencies are more, oh, this person's hot at the moment, or this person's this or that. They're Independent do feel as if they go, they're going to have a long-term career, and we want to help them get that, you know.
Talking about in those terms, that it's really nice that they can see someone's having a buzz, but our conversation now about the tour that we go on from here is still about putting in that groundwork. We could now go, we've got offers to go just shoot over to Broadway or do just big stuff, which would be amazing, but fizzling out like that. And then imagine it, for whatever reason, something didn't work out, to go through Soho Theatre like we're going to do what you're supposed to do as a show that had some success, rather than jump a load of stuff. Independent are really conscious of that. They want to lay the groundwork for a long-term career. What are people to be looked after, you know? Like, it's like being looked after by the Justice League or something.
Yeah.
It's like they're all specialised people and you've got a team behind you. So cool, man. So point being, I had a lot of support going up there into this metal box.
As you touched upon, it's a shipping container with some benches and some seats in.
Yeah.
And some black sheets. Again, it's one of the things I love about The Fringe, because, I don't know, man, it feels like proper shows. As someone who always felt uncomfortable in theatre spaces and things like that, and have grown to be comfortable in them, and there shouldn't be any discomfort, but those places are often made for rich people to feel comfortable in, because they will be resplendent and they'll have all the fineries and the beauty of The Fringe. Like so many of the shows I've seen on the free fringe or on the paid fringe, it's like, this next week this venue won't exist.
It's
a container, or it's the back of a pub, and they've put again a sheet up and some chairs out.
The sound lead on a lot of these venues, it's like, I think it adds to the character. Sometimes you make it part of the show if you can hear somebody else's show going at the same time, and you got used to it after 3 days. That's part of the show now at this moment. Boom, he's gonna do something.
Oh, I saw John Kearns doing his work in progress, and the people upstairs from him, I think they got nominated as well. I can't think of who they were, but he was like, how do you make an audience do that? Because it was a really odd laugh. It was explosions of laughter. It wasn't like laugh. It was like these big moments. He's like, again, I was going to say, I don't want to ruin his material, but he's not going to be in that position anymore. It was like, that's the reaction a magician gets. It's like, it is. It wasn't the normal kind of...
There's a few giggling little bits and tricks, isn't there, that you can elicit. Like anything with, I'm convinced, I don't want to talk myself down because I think I'm quite good at the piano, but musical comedy allows you to jump a few hurdles in that sense. Like people are conditioned to clap at the end of a song, for example. Yeah. You can play with the expectation of a song nearly finishing, but then not. That's a laugh. Like you can squeeze in a few little things that we're used to with musical comedy. And similarly with prop comedy or anything at all. Anything that involves, object permanence, like a baby. If something was supposed to come out of a box and it didn't, that's a laugh.
Yeah.
Like, so you can get those big laughs like that. That's just sort of a neurochemical genetic evolution laughter. That's
completely,
not,
yeah. Completely. I think in general in a stand-up set, unless it's an Anthony Jeselnik type setup punchline,
yeah,
there's a comfort in musical comedy in that, oh, this is when we're meant to laugh. There's yeah. like with yeah. loads of, particularly if it's story-based or anything else, there'll be some smatterings of laughter. You're like, but there's probably a next bit, and then there's a next bit, and I want to kind of laugh at the end because that's the you know, it's hard to gauge that. That is one of the beauties of musical comedy. As you said previously, you've got comparison. Like, again, reviewers love comparisons because it's easy and it makes. Or, I mean, audiences do.
Yeah,
it makes us feel comfortable. Yeah. It's a reference.
Yeah, for sure.
And certain songs of yours, I was like, you must have been blown away by what Bo Burnham did during the pandemic. Because there's again, I was feeling, I wonder if you're going to get more Bo Burnham comparisons than Russell Brand comparisons this year
because of
the music, because of the stories, rather than the Russell Brand ones, just because you've got big hair and you're from round here.
Well, the middle ground there is Tim Minchin. I get a lot of Tim, which is lovely.
Yes, of course.
The Bo Burnham special, I watched that on before I went to a gig at Bush Hall, like when it came out, and I just think, well, what's the point? Like, this is, we're having a great time, but what, I mean, look at that. That's the pinnacle of musical comedy. I think he did an incredible job. And the gig
was
fine.
I love those moments. Yeah. I had that with Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Right,
I came out of the cinema there and I was like, either I really want to go home and write, or I never want to write anything ever again. Because as you say, what's the fucking point?
It's a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
But to be on the wave of a paradigm shift is very cool. Like,
yeah.
Okay, well, then there was a new set of rules now.
Yeah.
But then that night, the Bush went really, really well. And then someone came up to me that night. It was so, so sweet. I needed to hear it. They said, I didn't think I would enjoy any musical comedy in a post-Burnham world, but now I see that there's something else to be done. Not in terms of equality, I suppose they meant there's other musical comedy.
Yeah,
and
completely.
That was, what a bloody... My PR company said that they've not had a... Well, I'm just properly talking myself up now, but it's organic.
Go ahead.
She said, we've not had a five-star in The Guardian since Bo Burnham. Yeah, on day two, sorry. Day two for these trips, like that's the last time it happened with Bo. And when you feel like you're part of that lineage,
and that
like,
would have been a few years back as well.
Yeah.
That would have been because when I was there, I think in 2010 or 11, I was meant to do an interview with Bo Burnham for The Fringe.
Right.
I couldn't make it, and Tim Key ended up doing it.
Sweet,
much better. I watched that.
I saw
think both
that
of them
interview.
Were, yeah,
I did
it's amazing.
See that interview. Tim's been really nice to me. I've met him at that Bush Hall at gig we were just talking about. He's been really sweet to me, this Fringe. Yeah, Bo's is a singular comedian. So then you don't feel as bad. Like when you're getting compared to someone who is essentially an archetype of a person, that's to be expected because they've set a new standard. And then, of course, everything's going to triple down. Yeah, of course, it's an honour.
So how was it on day one? I mean, we'll get to day two where everything changed, but or day three, I guess. But day one, you're up there. You're obviously part of the scene, so I'm sure there was a load of people you knew. But again, it's tough, particularly when your venue, for example, isn't the easiest to find. I think that and the Blue Room, I think it was called, were the two that were kind of...
A bit tucked away.
Yeah, they're a bit tucked away. And with the Fringe, it's like... Twitch, with a Twitch, if someone I like has streamed, the next day I'll be like, oh, I'll go and watch the VOD of that. And then I log on to Twitch and there's five other people I like streaming now.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, I'll just watch that probably actually rather than watch this one from yesterday. And that's the Fringe. Like, you could have all the intention of coming to see Jordan Gray, but then you're I'm not sure where it, oh, there's...
You can pick any cardinal direction.
Or whatever else and go, I'm going to go and watch...
Any point on the compass and head and walk, and you'll walk into a door, and someone will be doing something probably quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not it's not the kind of place that it's easy to force people to look hard for stuff. So, how was it to get to the venue and to do that first show, I guess?
I didn't get to do a tech run when I was supposed to three nights before. So I went in blind. They'd done it for me and they set up lights as best they could. And my show's got a cardboard phone box in it that I'll go into to get changed like Superman. That we'd not seen it, the size of it, so we're all panicking. Everything fit, everything's fine. I think maybe like eight people were booked, and then the Stamp Town, the collective, the people that produced me, there's this big trained bunch of Goulier trained clowns, but they also run this company.
Wow.
They're incredible. They all packed the place out. They're all acts. We're all on this together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that helped a lot.
Amazing.
Just made the first one go really, really well. I've got nothing to complain about. There's at no point in this conversation. There's been some hard moments, but with the show, there's never been a hurdle apart from when the roof nearly caved in. We did have a leak where the roof nearly caved in. Apart from that, it's just crept up and then curved upwards. So the first one was great. Second one, The Guardian came in and they came and packed it out again. Bless them. Like, they've seen it once, but they all came back for the second show.
Amazing.
So sweet. And then from day three, sold out until the end. And so then we put on those extra shows and sold out. Sorry if I'm jumping the gun.
No. But so also, I mean, again, I've remembered now, pre day one, you got a lot of love for your poster because your show's wonderfully called Is It a Bird? And it's about your kind of trans journey in life and superheroes.
Yeah.
And the comparison between the two. Yeah. So Is It a Bird is a perfect name for it. But you did a really good poster, and that got a lot of love ahead of the fringe.
A little bit of buzz.
That must have, yeah.
It's an in-house team, that Goulier bunch of trained clowns. They have an in-house photographer, compositor, and everything. If going with them, it's like you are committing, you are taking a chance on them, but they are of the highest caliber of people as well. Like,
it sounds amazing. So good.
Yeah, they did a great job. And it won. That won the best poster at the Fringe Award later in the run. And I think maybe six of their other posters were shortlisted. They're so good, and they really know what they're doing. They're just committed to the art of it. Like, I think
check them out as well.
They're so great. They do shows.
Fan of clowns. Yeah.
Soho Theatre, they do a bunch there as well.
Wicked.
The guy that did my poster, he was the kid that made that Lego video for Coldplay back in the day. So, like, and they did him a great deal for that video. Like, he makes money from that video.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize he doesn't need any money. So that's why he's so good at his job, because he just loves the art. He's not scrabbling to give me exactly the most. I don't know. He's certainly not charging me for like hourly time. He's just getting the poster done properly.
The best thing. Yeah. It's a beautiful position to be in, and it's a really tough subject to talk about openly, because a big problem in the arts is people always wanting stuff done for free, and that's not acceptable. However, some of the best things I've done have been for free, because it's mates and we're all excited to get it done. And like, this is exciting, this is fun.
Yeah.
And I've not even thought about the money. But that's often been in situations where I'm doing well enough to not have to worry about it.
Yep.
Like this guy, again, he can happily put hours and hours in because he wants to make something amazing, because he's not on the breadline. And it's a tough conversation, because I don't agree with the, oh, you should do it for exposure or whatever else. It's like, no, if you've got the time and you can afford to do it, and you're excited about it, then don't let money get in the way.
Yes, that's
right. Don't rule yourself out of it because of money, but equally don't, sell yourself short and break your back to make fuck all.
Exactly. But, I think he was out sort of photographing them as well. He went and photographed Coldplay at their concert that day as well. And he's like, he's just a working part of the team. Oh my God, his name's Dylan Woodley, and he opened Stamptown. Yeah, this gets me every time. He's got this brand. It's just his name. It's just Dylan Brand. All purple with his name on it. Sweaters, hats and everything. He comes out to like ride and solo with a bunch of people in purple morph suits. And we all get so excited and we're chanting along. But it's nothing. It's the premium Dylan lifestyle brand experience. It's just his name and the colour purple. And we're all up on our feet fucking loving it so much.
I've seen you wearing it. I didn't know what the hell's going on, but it makes sense now.
That's all it is. It's just his name and the hype of... it's kind of a statement, but more of just of a joyous expression of this is how easy it is to get excited about something. And nothing apart from his name. But it's just his name, and he fills 10 minutes with that, with the crowd on their feet just chanting and enjoying the fact that we're all excited about something. It's just smoke and mirrors. It's so funny.
I love it. So you then get a 5-star review in The Guardian, and that's not easy.
It's really
then
nice.
You're having to fight your way through 5-star reviews, because... The Scotsman, like, look, there was loads. Can you remember off the top of your head? Because there was a lot all at once.
I would like to pretend that I couldn't remember, but I can remember.
Who was it?
All right, so it goes, I'll try and do it in chronological order, but I don't think I could do that. It goes Guardian, The Student, The Telegraph, The Independent, The Scotsman, the Merv Stutter's Pick of the Fringe, which is really, really sweet. The Fest and Voice Mag.
Yeah.
That 9 or 10, I think.
That's mad, isn't it?
And then a smattering of 4s, Chortle and The Times, and The Evening Standard gave us 4s. Beautifully, gorgeously written 4s. I'm so spoiled because I've not done it before. So the first 4 that came through, I was like, oh God, everyone's going to be so disappointed in me. And they were like, it's The Times, you idiot. Fuck, shut up and just enjoy it.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful review. I think that's about right.
That must have been mad, right? Because the first one comes in and you might think, oh, wicked, that's cool. But
what an amazing fluke.
Yeah. It was all right on the night.
Yeah.
My people were in all this kind of thing. It's like, that's gone nicely.
First time magic, yeah.
And then just time and time again, that reaction, review-wise and crowd-wise, right? It must have been great to get those crowds, and particularly knowing your history of music as well. I know you're going to have loved winning over some of those people who came in not knowing what they're getting at all.
Yeah. And music does grease those wheels a bit.
And you will have loved any who came in not knowing what they were going to get that didn't like it.
Yeah.
You're like, cool, this is the best part as well. See you later. Surprise.
Force myself to be a little bit less critical. I might make judgments about certain kind of people and be completely wrong. I've got a front row of, you know, like, what's the politically correct term for people with white hair? I don't know. Like, what's the I don't know. Nice older people thinking, oh God, they're going to hate this. I'm so sweary and so brazen. But then a song greases that straight away. They're like, okay, well, there's someone, this person at least sat down for a little bit of their life and committed themselves to a craft. I can respect that to an extent.
Yeah.
And then by the end, I'm not a spoiler, but it gets a bit naughty at the end. And like, say naughty, just joyfully stupid. I'm a bit silly toddler running around. And just really joyful. I think that's what it is. The whole thing's fueled by joy. There's no cynicism in there. I'm not really being particularly political, but I think people project a bit of political onto it. Some transgenders, so I've got a novel combination of...
Oh, 100% parts. People project a bit of political on it. There's always that drama. I saw a lovely tweet that someone did. Who was it? It was Paul Sinner.
He's been so nice to me.
Because I know he'd come along to one of the shows and there was all this talk of woke comedy has killed the fringe. And he said, just so you know, a trans comedian came here doing a 50-seater venue or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then had to add 450
Spiegel tent.
Extra shows. And again, it's nonsense. It's people wanting to politicise things. But how was that? Because I spoke to you afterwards. Watching it in that room was incredibly exciting, but it was exciting because I know how well that's going to work in a big room. Like, you could tell it's a grand show. You know, it's not a kind of, here I am with my microphone, just here's some one-liners. It's a show. So how was it to get to do the Spiegel Tent shows? And they all sold out. And to have that space and room when you came up not expecting to have that space and room.
Just a treat. It should be so much pressure. You think, oh, right, okay, it's 10 times the size, 10 times the pressure. It was like, well, we weren't supposed to be doing this, so whatever happens is the best.
And it came at the right time as well. It came when it was really polished and you'd know it really well. So it's like, fucking put me anywhere you want, mate. Yeah.
The sound team, down to the nth degree, they did stuff to my keyboard that has made it sound better going to future gigs. They're so sick. So the sound is gorgeous.
Amazing.
But also, when you're playing a high-status character and playing music, the bigger the better, because it's designed to fill. You're like, God, this should be in Madison Square Garden, because it's a rock star. You're playing a rock star, someone that thinks they're a rock star.
Yeah.
It can't be big enough.
Yeah.
So it was perfect. It was just incredible. And it's in the round, some very emotional. There was a lot more crying from me in a comedy show than you'd expect for like coming to see some comedy. I bawled my eyes out on the first one and the last one. And then a little bit in between. There's just the middle one in between.
Yeah.
Fuck it. But like,
I'm not surprised.
In those big rooms. And the end of the last one, the last big one we did. So I didn't win the... I don't know if we're jumping. I don't want to jump ahead of you.
You jump anywhere you want.
But I was nominated for that lovely Dave's Comedy Award, which is the holy grail for comedians. It's wonderful to be nominated. It's so incredible. I didn't get it. Went to the wonderful Sam Campbell. Funniest bones of any guy I've ever seen. Incredible.
Yeah.
But then on that last show, my producer, he stormed the stage just as I was finished. And apparently 2 days before, I'd won the British Comedy Guide's Comedian's Choice. So you are the choice of the comedians of the Fringe. And they timed it perfectly because they probably knew I'd be a bit deflated if I didn't win that thing. And they're like, but, you know, Edinburgh is behind you. And just like, you know, like a cartoon, the tears just like straight lines down my face. And I'm to spoil it. I mean, the show's been done now, but I'm nude at the end of that show. And he was like, well, I'm your producer. And, you know, I wouldn't be a good producer if I wasn't nude as well. So then me and my producer just standing there nude, holding this mask.
I love it.
To the crowd. They're already up on their feet. And then to give them something else that's that important of that reward, it's like they can't get any higher.
Yeah.
So their arms are going up in the air. The people just, we're all, it's weird to have to share that with an audience, a tearful moment with a big audience.
Yeah.
Not just from me, like people are feeling something special because we're all in this together. It's such a bubble. Fringe is such a bubble. So we're just sharing a moment I've got real hand experience now of what it means to feel like you're sharing a moment in time with someone, and that's bigger than me. And most things I think I can factor in. I'm like, I've done that. I didn't do that at all. That's just a thing that happened.
Yeah.
That's very special.
I love that. Well, was it at some point along the run that you confirmed the Soho Theatre shows?
Yeah, we'd always wanted to. And they said maybe a few months in advance. And then when the reviews started coming in, they pushed everything forward. So that's now...
Brilliant.
We start on the 19th of September. Yes, we get to jump straight in. There was a big conversation. This is sort of behind the scenes-y stuff that got a bit ugly. But like, so... My agents and my producers hadn't met before. And when the agents landed in Edinburgh, it was kind of like a spaceship landed, and the producers got a bit nervy because it seemed like things were going to go in a different direction.
Right.
We got offered the Palace in London, which we're still going to do.
Yeah.
We're taking it on a national tour now. Got to meet on Tuesday. We're doing a big city tour. We're not going to do regional for now, unless maybe. But the conversation of my producers being pushed slowly out, and I was like, I'm crying. I spend so much time in tears, this Fringe, because I'm like, I didn't do anything wrong. Why is this ugly situation happening? But I haven't done anything wrong. So I'm meeting them individually, and then everything gelled together beautifully because they just hadn't had a chance to chat. It's intimidating when they've worked so hard and then these overlords drop in and like, right, this is what's going to happen. Turned out everything's beautiful and magical and lovely.
And it's an industry that's got a history of people being left behind and screwed over and money taking over everything. But what both sides probably didn't know is that it was two sides of goodies.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
There wasn't a goodie and a baddie. Yeah. You're assuming that the other side is a baddie.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, right, we're all goodies. Yeah. Oh, sweet.
You realise, everyone's moving in the same direction. They just were coming at it from different sides.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're exactly that. So everyone's just got their best intentions at heart. I also had I made this little short form thing ages ago that turned into a TV show, turned into Transaction. Yes. Somebody got left behind in that process ages ago in a really ugly manner. And I met them for the first time. I went for a little powwow and a little chat and resolved a five-year gripe during the Fringe. Wow. That was a really lovely thing to sort of untie of a knot. And then they came to my last show and celebrated. It was, it's a good month for clarity.
Yeah.
Yeah, just untying ugly knots. And I learned how the industry works a bit more as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Well, I mean, there's obviously, again, if we had recorded this when we were going to record it, we wouldn't have got that amazing award moment, because again, that's beautiful, and this will be coming out in a month's time, but we wanted to capture this excitement. But the other thing that made me sit at home and go did the right thing on holding off here was, so there's a point, there's one, I'm gonna spoil one small joke show, and it's when you reference, because you're talking about superheroes and all this, and you reference, you know, well, I'm technically an X-Man.
Yeah.
Magneto came to see your fucking show. Sir Ian McKellen.
The coolest moment of my life. Right, so...
That was the bit that I saw the photo and I was like, fucking brilliant. We could do a whole podcast on that, really. But
man,
how was that? Magneto, Gandalf.
That's really funny. Half people are like, Gandalf's coming, and half the other people are like, Magneto's coming. I'm like, I'm obviously in the Magneto camp as a superhero nerd.
Yeah.
Right, so we had a silly conversation early on about the five stars are coming in so much. That's so great. But after a certain point, it doesn't blip anymore on people's radar. The only cool thing that would happen is...
sold out, as weird as it is, that's all happened now. Yeah, so they just have to happen. That part of the future has been decided.
Yeah, they're now in, they're locked in.
You just have to live it, which is weird.
And those audiences, you're like, they don't know anything of what's going on. They might have booked it a month ago.
Yeah.
So they don't know any of this story. So there was no blip on the radar of like, how do we do another spike of something? And I was talking to my agents, so I was like, oh, like, it'd be really cool if like some famous people came along or whatever. And then I found out Karen Gillan had popped in as well, which is really cool. She's Nebula. Yeah. And I was like, that superhero came, and no one told me a superhero came. And we made a little joke about like getting somebody like that to come in, and it was just happening organically at that point. It was really, really weird. 2 hours before, they were like, oh yeah, we had lunch with Surrey, and he's quite keen. He's doing Hamlet across town. He'd love to come and see it. I think they might have been playing it up how keen he was. I think they were trying to shuffle him in as well. And it is an odd moment, because your brain, it's at the same time, you're going, I recognise this man, but also I know that it's Ian McKellen. So I'm like, where do I know him from, this man who is Ian McKellen? The brain, I couldn't handle it, because on earth would he be sitting there 2 metres away from me in that tiny box? And he was the best audience member. I got him with the dog story. There's a big story about fighting a dog, and it was rolling around. He loved that so, so much. But yeah, there's a bit in the show where I say I'm technically an X-Man, and then I had to stop because I was like, fucking Magneto. I was like, sorry. I was like, sorry, Ian, thank you so much for coming. I know this is a bit of a ball ache, But like, if anyone could knight me as an honorary X-Man, you're the only person probably qualified to do it in the world. Would you consider right now making me an honorary X-Man? And he looked sort of annoyed in like a jokey way. And he stood up. Oh, so the coolest moment of my life. He stood up off his seat. Like, I wasn't sure what he was going to do. And I kneeled, like he was going to knight me with a sword or something. And he put his arms out like Magneto. And he started properly committed. It's like shaking his arms at me like he was doing the metal bending thing. And I pretended I was floating in the air like he's manipulating the iron in my blood. And I was like, ah, it's incredible. He was so committed to it. So that's it. Honor every X-Man. He sat back down. And then afterwards, bless him, he's such a charming, charming, charming man. He just showed up like he's dressed in Magneto as well with his little, you know, like... I think there's a scene like where they have to be secretly come out of the war or something, and he's wearing like a trilby hat and a trench coat. Yeah. He just showed up in the door like that. And then he's like, my dear, that was a triumph. It's so wonderful to be so close to you. And then he came in and he saw my dressing room and he's like, you should be ashamed of yourself. So I had shit everywhere. And I was like, Sir Ian, I'm so sorry, Sir Ian. Oh, it's not mine. And he was like, you could have stayed with me. I have a spare bedroom. I'm sure he's just being very kind. Mate, and he said,
absolutely astounding,
just beautiful, so kind. And he's like, I'm going to tell all of my friends at Soho, have a wonderful run at Soho. And when I didn't win the award, he sent me this really sweet email that was like, just a triumph, you're wonderful. If you're a bit miffed about the award, just remember you've already got some and there's more to come. But more so than that, as we both know, the real reward is the love and laughter of the audience. Ian, I was like, oh man,
amazing.
Yeah, let's just stay with me forever. When I'm on my knees and he's magnetoing at me, I'm like, he should be getting paid for this. He's committed to this, is what he gets paid to do.
Yeah.
I'm in a film with him now, even though no one's filming.
Dropping this in casually. Yeah. And for any fake nerds out there who are going, Magneto can't knight you into the X-Men. He's the enemy of the X-Men. The real nerds know that Magneto and Professor X started the X-Men together and then had
different
views of how it should go. So
I'm really pleased that you brought that up.
Don't even start. I don't want these nerds going, well, why is the enemy of the X-Men? No. But I mean, that the reason that got me so excited and hit me on two levels was the show is about, as we said, your trans experience. I don't want to say trans culture because it's not. It's your experiences specifically and superheroes. And Sir Ian McKellen is Magneto, but he also co-founded Stonewall and made huge changes and impact for the LGBTQ+ communities. I did an amazing podcast with Michael Cashman where he talks about all of that. And I was in tears numerous times. And it was like, I just kept thinking, Ian is the embodiment of your show. Like what he's been through and what he's done. Your show could have been called, Is It Ian McKellen? Because it's literally the same joke of the LGBTQ+ part and the superhero part. And it was just,
what
a person to come along.
Yeah. I'd had that separate conversation with somebody about how much he's done for us as a people. And
yeah.
But I'd not put that together the way you just said it. That's such a nice way of saying it. Yeah, he's the only person that could have come.
Yeah, only person that should be there. Sense. He is more everything than me of that show. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he could have done it on his own.
He's going to start. He's going to do it next year.
And he probably would have smashed it, to be honest. See you, McKellen.
But yeah, that's just, that and again, the people don't talk enough about what him and Cashman and a few others did at a point where LGBTQ+ rights and exposure had started off really well and with loads of support, and then it really took a quick turn to legally not being allowed any of these things, representation wise not being allowed any of these things. So yeah, it just blows my mind. And again, it's beautiful that it played out perfectly as you telling it, because you told the moment of him as Magneto and then you had that real moment backstage. Yeah, and it's both of those worlds. It's amazing.
Just changed my life. And it I think there's the what the reviewers take seriously and what comedians take seriously, and then there's what the greater public, what hits them.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things where the people are like, oh, bloody hell.
Yeah.
This is a bit different now. And then after that, I sort of started seeing little people pop up in the Spiegels that I recognise. It's really nice. See little, I don't know, like Richard Osman staring back at me or whoever. I was like, oh, this is...
Weirdly, I sat next to Richard Osman for for John Kearns.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
And we just both happened to be in the back row, and there was an empty seat next to me and an empty seat next to him and whoever he was with. And I thought, it looks as if we're like trying to make this a VIP section, or we've told people they aren't allowed back here.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
yeah.
a tall person's a section, one of the two.
Tall VIPs, yeah, of
the
course.
Tall VIP
that's a different section completely.
I was laughing to myself in my head. It's like, if anyone comes in and tries to sit there, I might just say, no, this is the... And just give a little nod over to her and go, you're not allowed back here.
Look at this face. Now look at your face. Do the math, yeah? One of these things is not like the other,
my friend. Love the idea of the only way I could convince them it's a VIP section is by pointing at Richard Osman. They're not going to believe it with me. That's the thing that was making me laugh. I was like, it's a VIP section. Look.
This guy.
You don't know who I am, but look at this guy.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, we're coming up to the hour mark. The taking it on the road, the doing it at the Soho Theatre again. Iconic venue, in my opinion. So many of the best shows I've ever seen have been in there. How does it feel? You've not had a chance to, but preparing it for these new, for outside of Edinburgh, because Edinburgh, as you said, is a bubble. It is its own little thing, and now that bubble has popped and it's gone away for this year. How are you feeling about it?
I think that the Soho Theatre is a rite of passage, so it's like you should do it anyway. You should try to do it anyway if you can. But also then we get to create the London groundswell. There's so much people that I can't tell you how well it's selling already. It's like a dream come true. That's so above my pay grade to understand the numbers that we're shifting is.
Yeah,
I think it's magical. But to try and drum up that again in London, I quite like the challenge of that. You get to sort of stay an underdog for a little bit. We were offered to. A situation where we could easily jump the Soho Theatre and carry on. And when you're exhausted in the middle of a run, you think, oh, brilliant, I don't want to do this. But then coming back to Earth, you're like, that's the Soho Theatre. It's what you do. It wouldn't be legit if we didn't do it and then take it around the world. So the big shows, they're talking about, I see there's a phone box made of cardboard, which I shredded out of on the last show. As you can imagine, it's falling apart. Yeah. I hulked out of it. It was so funny. We're going to get like a full-on Doctor Who style brilliant. Turns around, lights, smoke, everything for that. That's all the money's going to go into that.
Yeah.
Do you remember like when Ricky came out on Fame and he's got his name in lights and then he's like, that's it now. It's just me and a podium, not even a coat hook. It's going to be that. We're just going to spend all the money on this phone box.
I love it.
It's playing now to bigger audiences around the country. It's like the venue sizes, I don't think it's anything less than like a 500 or 600 is what they're talking about, which is insane. But it's just one or two shows in that place we're going to condense. That feels like it feels like I'm about to go on a rock and roll tour.
You totally are. But again, I love that you're doing it the right way. And that's a credit to you, to your production team and to your agents. Because if you skip over anything, I don't know, I always feel it's a mistake. When we were doing our music, we played like the kind of Astorias and then we did Coco, and then we did the Shepherd's Bush Empire.
Yeah.
And we fell in love with Coco. So when we were doing our final tour, we asked if we could do two nights at Coco instead of doing a Shepherd's Bush or a Brixton or wherever else. It's like, no, I've never felt as at home on a stage as I have on that one. And there were points where when things were blowing up, we could have skipped that stage or this or that, but you don't know the venue that's going to click with you. I remember when we played Brixton Academy, that place has got so many gig memories for me, going to gigs there for years. I didn't click with it on that side of the fence. It was nice, but it didn't feel like our stage.
That's not how
it's really
it
weird.
In,
right? It's what works with your show and your performance and whatever else. So, it was an odd one. But again, I think that's perfect because then you're like, right, we've done this. Now we're going
to
do.
Being allowed to follow your gut feels like a privilege that working class people maybe don't get to have as you're being pushed up. It's like there's money suddenly there to make decisions.
You've got to
got to take it. And it was so nice that there was a bit of pushback from the agents. They're like people saying, no, not the agents specifically, but just people saying, why are you doing that when
there's more money to do it this way? And it's easy.
And I was led along as well. It's a dangling carrot of this thing. We do the first one should be a giant one. No, the last one on the tour should be the biggest thing. Let's ramp up. And being allowed to trust my gut is I've not had that privilege for quite a long time, but now there's a little bit of money in the bank. But we can actually.
And again, people from the music industry all know. Obviously, that's highly disrespectful to the comedy industry. I forget that the comedy industry is probably bigger than the music industry anyway. But we'll know that nothing hypes a big show like a sold out show. Like the fact that those Soho ones will sell out, and you've got a show. I mean, again, even if your humbleness doesn't want to admit it, the 5-star reviews a minute, you've got a show that can. deliver on the sold out. So the beauty of that is everyone that goes to that, as I did, will be coming out immediately and telling these specific people in their lives that they have to go and see this. And it's really important that they see this. So I think it makes perfect sense to do the Soho run. There's going to be loads of people who can't get tickets.
Oh, bloody, the people that we had to turn away at the door, I couldn't be a part of it. It's just some people that I don't know. Don't watch the Drag Race, but I'm a fan of all their work. Yeah. But there's like these lovely drag queens of Drag Race coming up, like, oh, we'd love to get in tonight. And people going, I'm so sorry. I'm like, I'll not go. Please let them come in. Don't turn away these bloody amazing people. Paloma sent me a lovely message. She's going to come to Soho. I don't know if you spoke between, because we spoke about Paloma Faith backstage when you came, which is a very kind thing for you to say.
Yeah, because again, I'll say it now on record, but it struck me immediately that when I used to gig with a Paloma, they were always amazing gigs, but I'd always sit there thinking, imagine how, I can't wait for this in an arena, in a stadium, or whatever else it may be, because of the style of performance. And yours was exactly that. I was watching like, this is so good. Even the Spiegel tent stuff, straight away, I was like, I know how good that's going to be in there. And yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Now you're going to have to deal with all the London people who want to come after it's sold out and
different bunch of people. But it's an upward thing, and just, it was such a treat to have you there. Thank you so much, man. You know, like, I'm very fond of you and your work, and it's what a lovely thing for you to come and do. And standing up for an hour, I don't even stand up for the hour. I get to sit on the piano for like some of it,
mate. People don't know. I you're all apologetic, and all I can sort is this. So I understand. I was like, no, that's fine.
I was half joking when I said it. I was like, oh, there's a tech box, but obviously you're not going to stand there.
It's made people laugh at basically anyone who's on my label. If they've toured the UK, I've either run the merch booth for them, or one time I did the full, I tour managed, drove the van and ran the merch booth.
Bloody hell.
Because it's exciting, and all of that's exciting. And so, yeah, I've watched loads of my favourite gigs from standing behind a merch table and being interrupted by people trying to buy stuff again. I'm trying to make an axe on at the moment. So, yeah, standing in a sound booth, it's the best spot in the room. It's going to be the best. That's where they're going to be.
Our producer's a big fan of yours as well, so he's like, that's perfect for him. But he thought I was joking as well. Yeah. I was like, I think Pip's actually serious. He doesn't mind standing in the
box. I kept kind of saying to you, look, if that's a serious offer, because again, I think we were both being quite polite about it. Look, I don't know if you were joking, but I'll do that if I can, because I want to catch you. But, well, let's speak outside of comedy to wrap things up, because as you said, you wrote a short that turned into a series. Was that with Paramount?
Yeah, well, I was at Comedy Central. And then that was licensed.
And they're all on YouTube.
On YouTube, Transaction. Yeah, six short episodes. Did really well, really chuffed with that. Then they got licensed out to Nick Frost and Simon Pegg's company, Stolen Picture, because Nick liked it. Nick said, if this ever gets made into a series, I want to be in it. And then they've got us a commission now for a terrestrial television channel, which I'm not supposed to mention, even though some other journalists have alluded to, but it's not been fully confirmed. But it might as well be, with Nick Frost playing my boss and Simon Pegg playing his boss. And it's me as a supermarket worker that's an affirmative action transgender hire, and she makes it everyone's problem because she's an absolute nightmare. And I love it. Love it so, so much. So that's my little, my heart is in this show Transaction that we're making. But then there's four or five other things in unscripted and scripted that are being pushed up, different companies. So many, I mean, I swear half those shows were just industry people packed in. Like, the agents have been incredible on that front. So yes, so much stuff to do. And I'm thinking about making some more music.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know. Like, I remember something you said ages ago, and it really resonates. And it's so simple. You don't think about it. It's like, why would I make it unless I've got something to say? You don't just churn it out until you've got something to say.
Yeah.
And I can't, it's like in a musical, they only burst into song when they can't express it through words. Yeah. It's like, why? But now I've got one or two in my heart. I'm just like, I can afford it as well. Again, it's that conversation of what you can actually afford to do it at the highest level. It's not I couldn't do a sort of a bedroom recording of it. It's got to be a grand, ridiculously grand string arrangement thing. Yeah, that's what it sounds like in my heart anyway. So that's nice. I'm going to do a Childish Gambino and just do a whole side career as well.
I love it. Are you going to return to A Tall Dark Friend for the music?
That's so
sweet.
So you
do the full Gambino. And
that's it.
I love it.
The first thing Tall Dark Friend done in 10 years, I guess.
I love it. That's perfect.
Because I brought out a single under my own name and I wasn't that fond of it. So like, it's fine. Platinum's a fine single, but it's under Jordan Gray.
Yeah.
So this is the first thing Tall Dark Friend's done. It's going to sound like a real Tall Dark Friend song.
I love that. I remember trying to book Gambino for the podcast, and it's literally different teams for Donald Glover and for Childish Gambino.
Okay.
Because I'd had Gambino on my radio show on XFM, And then he had one of his films, or it might have been the first series of Atlanta was out.
Right.
And I was hitting them up saying, oh, I'd love to have him on. I've got a podcast now. It's doing bigger numbers than my XFM show used to do. I'd love to have him on. And they're like, oh, no, we don't look after Donald Glover. And I kind of took a second, like, oh, shit, you mean you look after Childish Gambino?
Right.
But not Donald
That's like bloody...
Again, it might have been a moment that happened. I'm saying this as if it's a fact now, but that was my experience of it. I was like, oh, wow, okay, cool. Well, if you can get word to the people who look after...
You can get Donald to pass it on to Childish Gambino. That's like bloody Andy Kaufman and what was his alter ego, the club singer. Do you know
Yeah.
Whatever his name was. Yeah. Like, no, he's got different people, but Andy will tell him. Andy will tell.
Oh, exactly.
Zamuda? Bob Zamuda was his producer. I can't remember what the character's name was.
It was madness. It's like, okay, well, that's not a problem.
I wonder how Donald feels about Childish Gambino now. Because it is, some people genuinely have no idea who's a comedian or a writer or a screenwriter. Because he's a phenom in both places.
Yeah, and it's like, really interesting. It's so different as well. Like, I remember getting his first stand-up DVD, and it's so different. Like, he's playing almost the geeky
Troy,
character.
Yeah, he's playing exactly, Troy. Yeah, so sweet.
And then on his records, he's very much not playing Troy. No. He's got all the confidence and bravado and amazing talent. So I guess it's weird because this has been... That was a big, weird stutter. This has been... It was like a fizz. It's like I was fizzing with excitement to get this sentence out. This has been the maddest month ever, but it's been a long time coming as well. Because as I said, all the TV stuff that's been going on and conversations that you're having behind the scene have all been happening and they're all building up and it's just beautiful. I'm really glad that you got to have the Fringe because I think the way your career's going anyway, it's really weird in film and TV. I speak to a lot of people about this on the pod and off the pod, is you don't really get a moment, and in music as well, you don't really get a moment to appreciate how well it's all going because it's little in bits here and there and then it's exciting, but then you're working, it's a job, you're getting this done, and then there's this and then there's that, and particularly in TV and film, by the time that project that you were so excited about comes out, you're on the next one and you're not that excited about it anymore and it's happened and all this kind of thing. But the Fringe had to all happen at once in one place in one month, so I think you probably got to appreciate it more viscerally and physically and emotionally than all the other stuff that's been going on.
That's such a nice way of saying it. Absolutely. I like to hold on to as much humility as possible because when you're transgender, you get put on a pedestal anyway. That's like part of the show. Yeah. Everyone's telling you that you didn't do anything, but you're amazing because look, you've done this thing.
It's just who I am. No, but you're amazing for being here.
Thanks.
Oh,
must be amazing. But like, I did feel like I got to feel like a little rock star for a month, and it's like, it was cool. It's nice to feel like that and also try and stay the course and see how it affects you and stuff. So yeah, but you're right. Of course, films drips and drabs. We just pitched something, not to go on about it. I've got a feeling in 10 years it's going to get made. I've got a really strong feeling it's going to get made, but that's how long something like what I've just pitched takes to get made.
Yeah.
In 10 years, we'll be looking back like, oh, it's a different person when we pitched that.
Yeah.
Different ideals and everything.
100%. And it's the weird thing of when in the world that we live in now, when you get these moments of amazing news in an email, you kind of read it, you're like, fuck, that's amazing. Yeah. And you're like, make dinner.
Yeah.
Probably. I guess I'll go. Whereas at the Fringe, it is, as you say, you've said that it's a bubble, but it is this constant thing because it's show after show and you're getting the real reaction off the audience in front of you. Yeah. And you're getting those beautiful moments with your amazing production team who were all so into it and also proud of you. Like when I was talking to them, they were so excited. It was their journey as well. And it's all real and in front of you. And I think it's beautiful that's...
You're in your body. You're actually in your body.
Yeah.
It's not all... What's Matt what in Wolf of Wall Street? Who is it that's talking about the blibbity blip, the numbers up here?
Yeah.
It's not all up there. It's real. You're in your body. You're there. You've got 2 feet on the ground and, well, balancing on 1 foot. And it's really happening. That I did need that because I can take all that energy forward now. Like, wow, the real people like this. It's not just production people telling me I'm doing a good job, like when it comes out.
Have you had any moments of doubt? Because after The Voice, it was all big and then it wasn't necessarily how you wanted it to be or what you want it to be. I know you've spoken before of kind of having some realisations afterwards that it almost felt like you were a convenient package for them at that moment. And then, you know, we don't live in the best areas, Jordan. So it is one of the, I think it's, it can be, unless your mind, and again, I don't know what was going on behind the scenes in these years. Again, I'm also aware that I've had moments where everyone thinks I've disappeared from all industries and I'm having the most productive time of my life because I'm working on these things. But in the areas that we live in, it's easy to feel like, I don't know, to feel defeated or feel downtrodden or feel like you can never get past this or get past the restrictions of your class or anything else.
Yeah.
And I just wondered if there was any moments kind of in this journey that you've kind of felt a bit defeated and beaten, and if you can look back on them now and go, fucking hell, I couldn't have been more wrong.
I don't get to be, I always feel like an honorary woman at best, which is really, that's not a nice part of it. But the comedian, it's like most women in comedy have that same feeling. Like there's not a lot of hyper sexualized female comedians. They either really lean into it or they shave off the feminine parts of their personality that they would otherwise celebrate because it's this of this field.
To be one of the boys.
Yeah. So I'm leaping about in a jumpsuit and feeling like it's a really weird combination because I don't ever get to feel properly like just like a woman that I am. And in where I'm from, I'm usually in a hoodie and a hat and stuff. I mean, I'm wearing a hat now. But in Edinburgh, to be able to walk around like this hero with my stupid big hair and my big hoop earrings and stuff, just really like over the top accoutrements of femininity, but stuff that would never get to wear. That was like, that. Yeah, being your real self is such a wanky thing to say, but it's like real. Being your real self means that you can be as productive a member of society as you can possibly be. And what I do in society is I try to entertain people. So I was able to do that as best I could. Hopefully maybe this means there's some, I get to take a few more steps to being myself. I could go to my agent's office, for example, and be and say and do whatever I want, and it would be wonderful because they're on part of this journey. But then we do live in difficult
on
areas.
The train there and the train back.
Yeah so you're living thing. a compartmentalized life, and then you could log into Twitter. Thankfully my Twitter currently is just a barrage of lovely compliments, but of a normal day it's bloody your rights are being taken away, like this I got all the way through the fringe some comments, bloody Jordan Gray, that's a bloke, fucking talented though. I was like, that changed my whole trajectory. There's transgender comedians getting a load of stick, and it's like, how can you call this man a woman? That is a man. I get that they're very funny and talented and charismatic and they've got a great in-your-face delivery, but that is a man. I was like, I'll take that, man. I'll take that from...
Because, I mean, you've touched upon some nudity. Did you get any comments in this one going kind of, that is a man, but it's a fit man? Because, you know, because there's a lot of that. There are moments of like, oh, wow, this is happening.
That's a novelty. Know. I don't, nothing ever, but nothing bad from the show. 100% good from the show. Never had anyone waiting outside with a placard or whatever. No. It's really nice. But Jerry Sadowitz thing happened at the same time. So I was in a lot of conversations where they're like, how come this one performer's getting lauded for getting a knob out? And Jerry Sadowitz, I don't know the ins and outs of that story. But
I'm exactly the same. I talked about it with a mate and we were like, we don't know the ins and outs of it. But the reason they brought it up was I was hyping up your show, were saying, I wonder if Jerry Sadowitz, if the ins and outs of it involve you in any way, like if he was talking about, oh, I've heard there's this person who's getting their dick again. Conjecture. It's the only thing that we were like, oh, maybe, because again, it is, as you say, it's timely that one guy got huge amounts of abuse, and from the sounds of it, rightfully so.
I think there was a touch of Islamophobic language in there that's hopefully not present in my show, not to my knowledge. So no. I think there's a little bit of a confluence of different things.
Yeah,
it's the intent. I am when I'm nude up there. I'm a large toddler that's having a good time. I'm not. There's no directed.
Well, that's it.
Sexuality.
I mean, that's it though. Intent is the perfect thing there, because I talked to Frankie Boyle about this. And I'm a big Ricky Gervais fan. Yeah. I consider him a pal. Like, he's helped me out with some really good stuff.
He's a master craftsman. Never take that away from me. I think he's a wonderful comedian.
His trans jokes didn't make me laugh at all. And the intent didn't seem like they were particularly to make everyone laugh. It felt like the kind of nudging of a mate going, oh, look at this. And it's like, it didn't feel good. And that's, I think that's across the board in comedy. I don't think, like, all the talk of woke culture is ruining this and ruining that. It's like, no. People like Anthony Jeselnik can say the most offensive things in the world, but it's beautifully crafted, and it's clear that the intent isn't to like, again, you take it out of context, as happens with loads of comedians, and that's a problem. Like, I'll agree that that's a problem of woke culture, is taking this stuff that's meant to be heard in an hour-long set in a club at 11 o'clock at night and putting it in someone's Twitter feed as they're having their breakfast at 7 a.m.
Yeah, next to another piece of news that's related. Of,
exactly. Of course, so the removal of context and setting all these things is a problem. But yeah, as you say, it's intent. And I think that makes all the difference there. And I think you can do anything. You can be naked. You can not be naked.
You can not be naked if you like. You don't have to not be naked.
I mean, there's options. But yeah, it's been a hell of a month, Jordan. And as said, it feels like it's the midpoint. I was going to say the start of a lot, but it's not the start because so much good stuff has been happening already. So yeah, it's a wonderful midpoint or stop off on a hell of a journey. Yeah. I'm excited for what's ahead.
My life has changed completely. Yeah. It's a shift for sure. It's not a small escalation. It did change. But hearing you say that means a lot because I know you've been through this run. You know you're on your way. You know you see these patterns, which I'm seeing now for the first time. It's
really interesting. And you said kind of you went into the fringe and you weren't exactly a household name, and now you're far more of a household name. I mean, I'd argue because I'm pretty sure that because you've been on Distraction Pieces, you're already a household name. I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
But they only you're that
very specific household. My household, my mum's household up the road. Yeah. My dad's household down there. They're the households that were very aware before. But now, I can't wait to see. As I said, the Soho Theatre run, I think, is going to be glorious. And then everything that comes after
September 19th to October 1st. 2 weeks.
I love it.
Yeah, man.
I love it. I think this should be coming out around then. I think the start of that run or the middle of that run. But yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to see what's ahead. And I can't wait to see what we talk about next time you're on. As I said, the first time you were on, it was a very different conversation.
So imagine if it's a different career.
Yeah. I mean, the second time it was all pandemic business.
Sure.
That was a mini one. And now, again, it's all different. I'm thoroughly enjoying being like one of them maps that they have to catch a serial killer. Just plotting the journey along. Plot your career through Distraction Pieces episodes. Yeah.
It's so cool. It's just that you were the first, it was my first touchstone to like, you know, being on Distraction Pieces is a milestone for so many people that grew up in my age, my area, especially, you know, you're knocking about and it was like, is that a hero moment that's pricked up a load of people's ears, my contemporaries' ears, and that feels special because you fall into a habit as an artist of just wanting to impress other artists as well, and that is very much impresses other people, other artists and comedians when you say you know Scroobius Pip.
I love it. I used to have a similar thing with having been a guest on the Joe Rogan podcast, but now that has opposite effects and things. It used to really prick people's ears up in a good way, and now not so great. But things change.
Just this is funny.
I'll try not to become a very problematic podcaster in the future.
Please, because I don't have many left. You'll like this. You'll think this is funny. Hardcore Listing podcast. I went on and gave my 5 top comedians of all time that I was still working. 4 of them are now very, very problematic people. The only one that's left that I think I gave was Maria Bamford, who I'm hoping just stays the course.
Stay crazy. She knows what she's doing. Keep it all in line. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah,
that's the only thing you take away from this podcast, Maria. Please, you're doing so well. Don't say what you like, but just say it with the right intent and everything will be fine.
I always used to, like, Dan Lissac used to always laugh when I've had a few people really kindly get tattoos of my face on them.
Yeah, man.
Dan would always say, that's mad. What if you end up killing people? And I'd be like, hang on, you're the person I spend more of my time with than anyone in the world. You know me better than anyone. And you're thinking, it's a good chance he's going to end up being a horrible murderer. Oh, wicked. Yeah. Cheers, Dan. But there we are. Well, thank you for coming on again. And as I said, I'm excited for all of our off-podcast conversations and our future on-podcast conversations too. It's been a pleasure.
Such a joy. Thank you. You're a gentleman and a scholar. I don't know what sign off I was intending on, but that's what came out. You're so lovely. Thanks for having me, man.
You went full Ian McKellen. Love it. Thank you.
Thank you. See you next time.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Jordan Gray. I hope you enjoyed that. I forgot to mention the litany of people in my life from different areas who were all going to see Jordan Gray on Monday, on the Monday just gone. So previous guest, PC Leon McLeod, previous guest and host of the Mum and Mama podcast, Amy Ballman, previous guests and hosts of Sex with Charlie and Nina, Charlie and Bloody Nina, my partner B, and even my mum and my aunt. My mum's a two-time previous guest, maybe a three-time previous guest, probably. The maddest mixture of people. I'm not going to go into any more detail on how that came together because it's confusing to me. But wonderful time had by all. Well, what an episode, right? Well, good news. Happy surprise. I'll be back next week with another episode. Tune in then. Grab your tickets now for that London Palladium gig. This stuff's feeling historic right now. Yeah, I'll be back next week. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.